in, turn to Genesis 21. Genesis 21. We've been looking at the life of Abraham. And as we have, we've gone through his call and followed him all the way to the land of Canaan, then down to Egypt and back to the land of Canaan. Then he had to go rescue Lot, and then he pleaded for Sodom and Gomorrah, but they were destroyed. We come to chapter 20. Chapter 20 is similar to what happened in chapter 12. He went down to Egypt and lies and says, wait a minute, this is my sister. Or not here in chapter 20, not in, he doesn't go to Egypt, but the deal is with Abimelech. And then we come to chapter 21. And we find the birth of Isaac. The birth of Isaac. Here we find three stories, really, and they seem unrelated, but as I read through them and saw if there's really any kind of connection that could be made with what was happening here, and I saw that there are three situations that need to be looked at and see that there is times that we need to always, we really need to be looking to God in the midst. We need to be looking to God amidst the treasures, amidst the tears, and amidst the troubles that we have. All three of them are found here in Genesis 21. Well, Genesis 21, starting in verse 1 through 8, is the more familiar with to you, perhaps. Here is Isaac is born. Now, as we look to God amidst our treasures, here is a real treasure for Abraham. Because when he was 75 years old, back in chapter 12, we find that is when God called him and told him to make him a great nation. Now, Abraham is 75. Sarah is not quite that old. Abraham is 75. And being 75 years old, he is told he is going to be a great nation. Now, that's quite curious that he's supposed to be a great nation that way. He doesn't have any children. In fact, they were unable to have children. But he trusted God. In chapter 16, being impatient, Abraham and Sarah talk it over. And Sarah says, here, take Hagar, my handmaid. So at the year, at 86 years of age, he becomes not a grandpa, a dad. He becomes a dad at 86 years of age. Ishmael is born. We find the next chapter that about 13 years have passed, and Abraham is 99 years old. He was 75 years old when he was told he would be a great nation. In chapter 17, he's 99 years old. Sarah is 90. When God commands circumcision to Abraham and his descendants. But he doesn't have any except Ishmael. Chapter 18, again, he's 99 years old. Sarah is 90. And she laughs. The angels come and on their way to Sodom and Gomorrah, and they say, you're going to have children. And she overhears it while she's in the kitchen. I assume she's cleaning the dishes after they have eaten and stuff. She is in the tent, and the men are out there talking and say, God says, I'll be back about 9 months from now, and you'll have a kid. She laughs to herself. It was such a silly thing. That just can't happen. Now, she's not the first laugher. It is in chapter 17, Abraham laughed. His faith was credited to him for righteousness, but we find that later he laughs about the fact that he would be a dad at that ripe old age. Well, Sarah has her turn, and she laughs to think what a silly thing that she would be, she would have a child. We come here to chapter 21, and we see the Lord visited. The word visited there means to dwell, to stay with. It's actually used, translated as numbered most of the time. Numbers are numbered. there to reside or the camp. The Lord was with Sarah. I'm assuming not physically, in a physical form, as he was with Abraham earlier. I don't see an indication of that so much, but certainly spiritually, working physically in her body. So that way, she, not only being barren all of her life, but beyond the years to have children, guess what happens? He visited Sarah, as he said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time for which God had spoken to him. There it finally came to pass. All that to say, 25 years, we find here that in verse 4, Abraham was 100 years old, or verse 5, that Abraham was 100 years old, Sarah was only 91, just a youngin' still. See, 25 years from the time that God promised you're going to have a child until when he brings that to pass. We're so impatient, as Abraham and Sarah were. But God always keeps his promises. Now, when God keeps his promises, something can happen. Something can happen that I observe in life, and I want you to observe as well. When times are good, you'll be tempted to neglect God. When times are good, you'll be tempted to neglect God. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, turn there. Deuteronomy chapter 6. A little later, Moses is writing to the children of Abraham, the Israelites. Deuteronomy chapter 6, and looking at verse 10. Telling the Jews, it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities which you didn't even build, houses full of all good things which you did not fill, hewn out wells which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. Talk about spoiled. When you have eaten and are full, not eaten and survived, eaten and full, then beware lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. You will fear the Lord your God and serve him and take those in his name. You shall not go after other gods, the gods of the people who are around you. For the Lord your God is a jealous God among you, lest the anger of the Lord your God be aroused against you and destroy you from the face of the earth. When times are good, there is temptation to neglect God. To say, well, things are going well. When do people tend to come to God? When there's a crisis in their life. Some people, God uses that in some people's life to save them. And that's good. But sometimes there's people that will try to get on God's good side because things are going bad and they don't get saved, but they want to get religious and somehow have God's smile upon them. Sometimes it's a believer who has just kind of gone along happy with everything they have and failed to acknowledge God's blessings. And as a result, they neglect God. And their lifestyle begins to compromise. How was it that we saw that as we look later in history, that we see Israel, things are good, and what they start to do? They start to compromise. They start falling after these other pleasures that the world has to offer. And next thing you know, within three generations, you're down to where the people knew God and loved God and served God, all the way down to they didn't want to have anything to do with God. Not the one true God. He was too restrictive. He was no fun. And so we find in verse 15 what God would do. And did he do it? Yeah, he did. Did it wipe them clean off the face of the earth? He removed them from their land a few times. Brought them back, a remnant, because of his promise to Abraham. We need to be very careful when times are good, because you will be tempted to neglect God. When times are good, it is needful to look to God. Here, back in Genesis chapter 21, we see Sarah said, God has made me laugh. There it is right there. She acknowledged who brought laughter to her life. Made her laugh. Her laughter now. Back earlier in chapter 18, when she laughs, it was of the silliness of the impossibility of a woman her age getting pregnant. That's wild, crazy talk. So she laughs to herself. Oh, that's a good one. That won't happen. Now she laughs. I wonder if God was laughing too at her. She laughs, and her laugh is with joy. God has given me joy. He has made me to laugh so that all who hear me will laugh too. I like to think, I made this up, but I like to think that when she's laughing for joy, she's also laughing at herself a little bit. What a fool I was to say that couldn't happen. That's not in the text here, but I wonder if she ever did that. She is filled with joy, and who does she attribute that joy to? To God. When times are good, it's needful for you to look to God, to give Him the glory He deserves. To remember it is His goodness that you are enjoying and by which you are able to enjoy the things He has given to you. And when you look to God, when times are good, you remind yourself to continue to trust Him. To continue to look and praise Him for the joy that you can have. So when times are good, it's needful to look to God for joy, with your joy. Give Him glory He deserves, remember His goodness, and also remind yourself to continue to trust Him. The child grew in verse 8 and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on that same day that Isaac was weaned. There is joy in their life. You imagine, here you are, 100 years old. It's hard enough to imagine, isn't it? Abraham, by the way, lived to be 175. Sarah lived to be 123. Abraham lived to be 175, so he saw Isaac grow up and saw him get married and so forth. There was great joy. Here is only son, his only rightful son. And there was great joy in the household as a result of it. Sarah, though, is not done laughing. She's not done laughing. Because she laughs again. The next point, to look at God amidst her tears, we find her laughing again. You won't see the word laughter in the English. It's in the Hebrew, though. It's translated appropriately. In verse 9, Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, her handmaid, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Sarah, that word scoffing there is the word laughter. Hagar was given to Abraham, and they had Ishmael. And now she looks at the situation. She has a son, her son. And she has a son that's not hers, but is her husband's, Ishmael. Now, when Sarah and Abraham die, Who was first born? Ishmael. The line is through the dad. And the dad's firstborn is Ishmael. Do you see what's building here? Verse 10. I don't want that boy to have our inheritance. Get him out of here. Boy, that's pretty tough, isn't it? Her laughter against Hagar was scoffing laughter, mockery. She wanted to get rid of that woman. So she tells her husband, ditch her. Send her away. She has no part with us. That's not what she said 14 years ago. How frustrating it is for poor Hagar, the victim here. Verse 11, the matter was very displeasing to Abraham. He didn't like the idea. Why? Because this is his biological son. God said to Abraham in verse 12, don't let this be displeasing or disturbing to you in your sight because of the lad or because of the bondwoman, the servant gal. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. Was God necessarily happy about the way that Hagar was treated? I think we'll see the answer in a few. But what he does is he uses what was happening here for his purpose and design. He told Abraham back in chapter 12, in chapter 15, chapter 17, you are going to have an inheritance. And being that Sarah was his wife, the implied message is you and Sarah are going to have children. Did they? Not for a long time. So Hagar came into the picture. God used that for his plan and purpose. But his design was for Hagar, Sarah and Abraham to have Isaac. Abraham, he sends away Hagar. Says, yeah, I'll make, and God says, I'll bless Ishmael for your sake. Abraham, he rises up early, takes the bread and gives it and water and sends them away. Now it doesn't take many days when you're in the wilderness to run out of water. In fact, it got so bad that they are absolutely on the edge of death. She cannot bear to see the death of her child. 14-year-old son, Zach is 13. We can't kill him off till next year. He was going to die. She saw it. So she brings him over to the little bit of shade that's there, lays him there, and she has to go off a ways away. I wonder if she can hear his voice. Raspy, because there's not enough water. Crying. In pain. She goes off, just can't bear to stand to watch him die. She weeps. Verse 17, God heard the voice of the lad. I want you to know something. God hears your tears. God hears your tears. What kind of pain do you suffer? You think nobody cares? Hagar is out there all by herself, her son a little distance away. There is no help for Maya. I've seen pictures out there. I haven't been out there yet. But they see the pictures and there's nothing but rocks and desert. And it's a dead place. practically, they're going to die in a dead place. There is no help, no hope. When you feel like you're in that place where there's no help and no hope, remember, God hears your tears. Unfortunately, when we hurt, sometimes we abandon God. We're tempted to abandon God because it is because of God who's in control of everything that I'm down in this place. Maybe it's because of decisions that I've made. Maybe it's because just the circumstances that's happening, but there's no hope. And I am hurting, emotionally torn up. But you know what? Abandoning God is not going to help. It is a sinful reaction that we have, that we get angry at God because of what has happened, and because we're angry at God what's happened, we don't want to talk to Him. We get angry at somebody, you don't want to talk to them. We get angry at God, don't want to talk to Him. We're so foolish when we do that. We don't think we are. We think we're justified in it. But we are. We're foolish. It's understandable our feelings to do that. But we must not abandon God that way. He's not abandoned you. He's still right there with you, going through it. And maybe you don't know or feel it, but He's standing right there with His arm around you, saying it's going to be okay. Don't abandon God. Don't turn your ears off to Him, because it is vital for you to look to God. Why? Because God has the answer. She's at the end. Sometimes we think we're at the end of our rope and we got another 30 feet to go. But here, there was no help, no hope. God heard the voice of the lad. The angel of the Lord called out to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, "What ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him in your hand, for I will make him a great nation." Well, you can't make a great nation out of a dead boy. God opened her eyes, and she saw the well, saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad to drink. They lived happily ever after. When we are in hurt, and we have those tears, be careful about abandoning God. Here we have two great things that have happened. We see that amongst the joy, Sarah did not forget God. We see here that Hagar, in her tears, God certainly didn't forget her. The child, God was with the lad. He grew up and dwelt in the wilderness, became an archer, and dwelt in the land of Paran. His mother took... And his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt, where she was from. God, amidst the tears, was there. So don't abandon God, but hear His voice and be comforted by it. Sarah's jealousy and her role for her son caused Hagar to be cast away. I want to remind you never to let your joy, your contentment, become a grief to others. If God has given you much, don't look down on those with little. If God has blessed you with health, don't look down on those who are not healthy. When you're hurt, you're tempted to abandon God. But when you're hurt, it's vital to look to Him. Finally, look to God amidst your troubles. There are hurdles in your life. God puts hurdles there sometimes, or blocks to prevent you from, you think, from having a great time, but in the end, prevent you from destroying your life one way or the other, not doing His will. Sometimes as you are following the will of God, there's hurdles that come. Those are for your good. various trials which help you grow spiritually. And those physical barriers, whatever they may be, maybe it may be a financial barrier, a health barrier, maybe a time barrier, whatever kind of barriers, hurdles that you're finding yourself struggling with, what do you do amongst those? When life around you gets tough, it gets hard, it becomes even seemingly impossible, what do you do in your troubles? Well, one of the things we could do when we struggle is we can be tempted to contend with God. God, why would you let this happen? We have a contention here, not with God, but between Abraham and Abimelech, a ruler in the area of Canaan there. Abraham reproved, back up, got a little far there, verse 22. And it came to pass that at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, said, God is with you in all that you do. Now, how would they know that? They've seen God give many blessings to Abraham. And now, therefore, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my prosperity. Posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you're journeying, and you're traveling. Remember, Abraham is really kind of a nomad. Abraham said, I swear it. I will deal with you respectfully. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because the well of water which Abimelech's servant had seized. Abraham had done all the handwork, and after completing the well and prepping it and perhaps even using it, Abimelech's people under him thought that was a great place to get their water. And Abraham said, they didn't build that. Now I didn't build that so they would come. And Abimelech said, well, I didn't know this was happening. You did not tell me, nor have I heard about it till today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen with him and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs, the flocks by themselves. And Abimelech said, what's going on here? And Abraham says, these seven is really a testimony to you that I have dug this well. And you receiving the sheep, and the SRV here, paraphrasing what's going on, you receiving this sheep is a testimony, you're a witness that this well belongs to me, that I built it, and that it is mine. And so Abimelech received those gifts, and it was designated, it was made clear that that belonged to Abraham. They called the name of the place Beersheba. It's a southern part of the land. Verse 20:33, you see Abraham plants a tree there in Beersheba, and then called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. Here he is amongst the troubles that took place. God had given him wisdom, and there was a deal worked out. And in the end, Abraham then looks where? He looks to God. Once again, you see a looking to God. Hurdles in your life, no matter how tall they are, call for God's assistance. And when you struggle, you can be tempted to contend with God. God, why would you let this happen to me? Sometimes we do that. We look at the situation that we have, the bills that I have. Maybe I've accumulated those bills by my poor wisdom, and as a result of my own bad decisions, I have a heap of bills. Sometimes it's just because things break down physically on your body or in your car. Sometimes it has to do with money, but it has to do with maybe your health. Maybe it has to do with people that you're working with. There's always hurdles in your life. Sometimes little baby ones that you can just kind of plow over. Sometimes really big ones that you have to really take care of. It's when we have these come into our life, sometimes we feel overwhelmed and we say, God, why would you let this happen to me? And blame him. Do you not know he is the one who helps you through them? Abraham recognized that. That is why he planted that tree and he called the place the Lord, the everlasting God, and to attribute to God. He recognized God's hand in what taken place. When you struggle, it's vital for you to look to God. James says, if we lack wisdom, he'll give us wisdom. We see here by Abraham going through this process that he wisely made a good choice of what to do and how to react. And through it, I believe here in verse 33, that he's pointing out to the fact that it is God. He's attributing the success that he had in overcoming these troubles to God. We see here in chapter 21 that we need to look to God amidst our treasures, the blessings that God gives to us, the tears, the emotional hurts that we have, and the troubles, the physical difficulties that are going on. Maybe you haven't had trouble with this yet, but time will come where you will have great joy in your life and you'll be tempted to neglect God. There'll be times that will come that will be very painful for you, very tear-filled, and you'll be tempted to abandon God. There's going to be times in your life, maybe you're struggling with them right now, where physically there are things going on, and you're tempted to contend with God because of the contentions in your own life. Sinfully speaking, humanistically speaking, it makes sense. Biblically speaking, spiritually speaking, it's so foolish. God is the one who delivers. God is the one who gives great gifts. God is the one who comforts and provides. As we look at chapter 21, I want you to recognize and see that amidst all that's going on in your life, make sure you keep your eyes focused on Him.